Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now. I love it. We're all in agreement. Here on the edge, brains, this is the place. I'm pointing to it right here. This is the place where the conversation is sharp. I think I said my thing wrong. I said my tagline wrong. Oh. This is the place right here where the conversation is pointed and the guests are sharp and the responses are never dull. Who forgets their own tagline? Me, because I'm excited to have our guest right there, Denise Lucy from Australia. Brain, she's got one harrowing story to tell us about being, you know, put in an orphanage as a child, what that looks like, what that felt like, you know, how she was separated from her family and her siblings, how she was treated, mistreated, but how she's recovered, how she's an advocate for young children that are in that situation right now, what we can do to support them, be empathetic. Let's talk about the foster care system a little bit. It's a lot going on, and she's going to be writing a book. So we're going to ask her, what is the writing process? You know, what does that take? What are you thinking about? What are you feeling about? And a whole lot more here on the edge. Let's welcome her today. Hello, Denise Lucy.
Hello.
You say that's an Irish name, Lucy, like Mahoney.
Yes, it is. It is an Irish name.
Wow.
That's my heritage.
Were you born and raised in Ireland?
No. My Irish background is, I think, third generation. I was raised with a lot of traditions and culture from the Irish background, so yeah. I identify with it very strongly.
And so how long have you been in Australia?
Oh no, I was born and raised in Australia, but like I said, my Irish background is a third generation. It was my grandparents that were from Ireland, so
okay. All right. Yeah. So let me ask a question, because in brains, you're going to ask, well, why she asked that? Well, it'll all come back full circle. Because of your Irish roots, were you raised also in a religious doctrine, Catholic?
No, my mother refused to raise us in a religious doctrine, but she was raised in a religious environment, and that had a big impact on her life and her nine siblings. So, yeah, it did have an impact on her life. And
those nine kids, that's one heck of a pecking order there, huh?
Yes, that is also part of being raised in a large Irish Catholic family. Mm-hmm. So,
pretty disciplined, pretty strict from what I know.
Very much.
You good?
Very much. And the priest kind of ran the house, if you like. So it was his way of doing things, and coming from a very religious background, and back in those times, women had their place, so they very much had to abide by what the church said and what their husbands
exactly. And it was about being seen and not heard.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, so a lot of this stuff is, you know, like generational.
Absolutely.
For me, in my story anyway. It goes back into generations, and part of, you know, the way I saw my role in my family, I call myself the black sheep. That's actually what I'm going to name my book, is the black sheep. And that was about breaking cycles. Breaking the domestic violence cycle and the other issues in relation to, you know, the disempowerment of women. And I certainly experienced that in my early life, and I've experienced it in my life as well. So
take us back a little bit so my brains can kind of put all the pieces together.
Yeah.
So dial back to, you know, you and your family, and when you got separated from your family and you had to go to an orphanage.
Yeah. Okay. So when my mother was pregnant with her last child, my siblings and I were placed in a home for children, and we were placed there while she was in hospital. So we didn't know we were going there. We were just placed there, and we endured some horrific stuff in the home. Well, I can speak for myself. I'm not sure what my siblings experienced, but I certainly did. And recently in Australia, they had the Royal Commission into Childhood Institutional Abuse. And they invited people, if they had experienced that, to, you know, put in a claim for compensation. So I did that. I subpoenaed all my records, and I subpoenaed, you know, records to prove that I had been in the home. And I've got a transcript from all those records being subpoenaed. So those records come from police, from counsellors that I have seen over the years to help me unpack my story, if you like.
So you were placed there by, your mother was in the hospital. You were just
I was placed there by my father.
Oh, by your biological father? Yeah.
Yes.
And what happened? Yes. He just couldn't pony up? How many kids was it? Two, three?
No, we had three children, and yeah, he couldn't manage. Wow. He couldn't manage three of us on his own. So
they put you in this place, did they separate the three of you, or did you remain?
My sister and I remained together. My brother was placed in the boys' section of the home. So we didn't see him for the whole time that we were there.
So about how long were you there?
We were there for about 4 months. Mm. And just being there in the 4 months had a huge impact on my life, and it was something I don't think I ever recovered from.
In which way? How did it impact your life?
Just the fact that we were taken there with no explanation, and the abuse that we endured from the people that ran the place, and I experienced abuse from some of the residents in there as well.
You mean, and I'm sorry, you don't have to go into, you know, micro detail, but physical, mental, spiritual, what kind of abuse were you?
Physical, sexual, and, you know, psychological abuse as well. We didn't hear from our parents at all the whole time we were in the home. So we were just kind of plucked out of nowhere, put in this home. And, you know, 4 or 5 months later, we were taken home. It was sort of a very surreal time.
It was it like a dormitory type home, or was it a residential home?
It was a residential place. So it was, you know, a beautiful big white building, sweeping grass, and you know, like, it looked inviting, but it certainly wasn't.
We're hearing a lot about that now with our celebrity, like Paris Hilton. And other individuals that have been taken to these places. I know my nephew had to go to one of these places where they try to get your mind right, you know.
Yeah.
They try to discipline you. You're unruly. Parents pay big money to put their kids in these institutions. But I think, you know, they say, well, look, we're trying to break your child, like they're breaking a horse or something. And we're trying to break them down. So we want them in isolation. There's no need for you to call. If anything happens, we'll call you, this, that, and the other. And parents really just kind of turn their kids over. It gets to a point, though. Now, I'm not saying this is your situation.
Yeah.
But it gets to a point where some of these kids cannot be handled regularly.
No.
So we need to have oversight. We need to have a regulatory board that goes in. These people need to be certified, because I'm sure all of them aren't quote unquote counselors or have had this type of training.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, the people that ran the home I was in were all nurses. So they were definitely not trained, you know, to deal with all the different issues relating to children. Particularly children who were traumatized, like we all were, You know, the way they treated us back then is if, you know, we were upset, was to beat us until we were quiet. It took me many years to learn how to cry because I was, you know, if you showed any emotion, you were beaten for it. So
yeah, one of my friends told me that they would put they would spread out rice and make them get on their knees.
Wow.
They'd have to stand on the right on their knee.
Yeah. Well, I was belted one morning for wetting the bed, and they wouldn't allow you out of bed after 8 o'clock at night. And so I wanted to go to the toilet one night, and I asked, you know, the carer if I could go to the toilet, and she said no. So I was only 9, by the way, when I was in this home. So, yeah, I subsequently wet the bed, and I was punished for it and shamed as well. I had my sheets hung over the bed, and you know, they had to stay there for the day, and all my peers saw that and watched me being beaten by the nurse for wetting the bed. So
fast forward, you get back to your mother and father, and I know you're looking at them like, what the hell?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And we lived in fear. We were terrified of going back, so we lived our whole life in fear of ever going back there. And then I kind of, you know, my parents weren't what you'd call a happy family either. So, you know, the experiences I've had growing up have created the person I am today. And, you know, for me, it was learning how to be resilient and, you know, how to, I don't know, grieve openly and, you know, be in touch with my feelings. That's exactly. Taken many, many years of counseling and support, you know, from my what I call my tribe. It's taken me many years to come to that honest place inside me.
What opened the tuna can, though? What was the aha moment? What was your breakthrough moment?
My breakthrough moment was meeting a like-minded person. And someone who had shared the same experiences as me. And I call her my soul sister, and that was Prue Blackmore. And so
I know Prue.
An amazing human being. And well, I started going to sweat lodges with her and going through, you know, some of her courses and her ceremonies. And you know, it was a safe place to let go of this stuff and to grieve. And, you know, and in doing that, you come the full circle. You start stepping into your power, into who you really are, and you start to own it. And,
You know, Prue is very intense herself. She'll break you down.
Oh, yeah.
She had me flying on the back of a dragon. I'm like...
That's in her meditations. Yeah, absolutely. The dragon.
Yeah, but I was gone. I was with her. I was right there on the back.
Oh yeah, the dragons.
So you get to this place. You have this meltdown, or you have this epiphany. You have this awakening. Yeah. You go, wow. Yeah. You know what? This is not the life that I want to live anymore. What steps did you personally put into action to make yourself feel better, look better, do better, and want better, Denise?
Well, the first thing I did was start to own who I was and to just reclaim who I feel I am inside and make no apologies for that. So for me, it was really about working on my self-esteem and working on my confidence and, you know, just allow myself to develop into the person I am today. I've always... you know, being a very fearful person. But I think that's all part and parcel of the, you know, the background, the upbringing, the, you know, the experiences and the trauma I've been through. They've all shaped me, but I've also journeyed more to the positive side of things. And, you know, I kind of feel like even though my experiences have been pretty bad and overwhelming, they've also shaped me.
Right.
So I've learned a lot from that. And for me it was about reclaiming, going back to the past, reclaiming that story and making my own.
And if you don't have confidence and self-esteem, you live this imposter syndrome.
Absolutely.
You never are able to peel back the layers and really identify what you are, because there's so much going on. There's so much rattling around in the monkey mind. you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
And even though you have learned to live with this, it will never go away.
No, of course not.
It will never go away. But you know that you have tools there in your toolbox. You have friends, you have resources, you're honest with yourself, you own them. And so that is really, really a big step.
I call it my medicine bag.
Yeah.
I call it my medicine bag. So, And I pop in there when I need to, and I call on people when I need to. So I have a lovely group of friends that, you know, support me and honor me as a person. You know, I'm more than my story. I'm not a survivor anymore. I'm Denise Lucy, and I am me. And, you know, I'm not defined by a label. So that's how I see myself. And part of my story with my book is not about the blaming and shaming, of what's happened to me, but it's more about a story of survival and, you know, how I did that and how I built my resilience and how I was able to get up and face another day and do it again and, you know, and not be pulled down by it.
Yeah. Do you have children, Denise?
I do. I have 4 sons. And they're all men, and they've all left home.
Wow. What was that like? Yeah. Number one, being a mother of 4 men, because you know what? You were subjected and traumatized by a man.
Yeah.
So how do you rewrite that history, number one, for them is the first question.
Yeah.
And then two, how did you feel falling in love again? I mean, that was tricky within itself.
Absolutely. Well, my 4 sons are men, and I'm a mother, so but I believe they're 4 amazing men, and they're all fathers themselves, except my youngest one is not yet. But yeah, they're all amazing people. Falling in love again? No, I have fallen in love, but I've been mostly single for 18 years. But that's been a choice, because I know I've got to work on myself and trust again, and that's something that I need to look at and work on so that I don't go out and choose someone who will then abuse me.
So I probably know for sure. You're not going to take no more abuse.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. And I'm going to make sure of that.
Right? Just absolutely. You know, we're not going to abuse anymore.
Never, ever.
But you know, Denise, at our age, honey, everybody's gonna come with some baggage. Okay.
Oh, totally. He's got some
bad credit. He's got an ex-wife. He got a bunch of kids. He's been drinking, drugging. You know, so we have to establish boundaries and figure out just how much are we gonna tolerate and in what aspect. Because when you put your hands on me, the deal is over.
Absolutely.
After he comes up off the ground. The deal is over. But see, I've been married to a man for 37 years, and I
adore, that's amazing.
I adore that brother. Yes, I do.
Yeah, of course you would.
And you know, he's just so mellow. I don't understand why women continue to stay. I mean, you know, your self-esteem is torn down.
Yeah.
You're victimized. You don't feel worthy. You don't have any money. You got the kids. Yep. There's a bunch of reasons to stay. But there's also reasons to go. Your freedom, the excitement of what's going to come around the corner, your growth, your development, the world, aspirations. What would you tell a woman that's stuck right now, Denise? What would you tell her?
I would tell her to be informed and to reach out and to also, tap into what support systems are around her and to just keep taking each day as it comes. Just keep moving forward. Don't look back. Keep going. For me, it was learning about the dynamics of domestic violence and the cycles of it and the energy of it. I had to learn about how it starts and how it gathers momentum and then how to leave it. Because women in those situations are very trapped, and if they have children, they feel powerless. The moment you feel powerless, there comes in the issue of, financial assistance. Women often don't have that kind of behind them. So it just makes them feel like they've got no choice but to stay. And particularly if they have children. And the thing with domestic violence is most men escalate their behaviour if the women leave as well. So the women think they're going to be safe. Yeah, safe leaving. And often they're not. They're even more targeted. So
and supported by their families. You know.
Yeah. Because
it's rough. Okay, here you are. Oh, they say, here come Denise with them four kids. You know, we can't put them up. And kids gonna be running around here eating up everything, and Denise is sitting over there crying. You know, but there are support groups that understand that, brains.
Oh, absolutely. There are shelters
that will take you in.
Yep.
They will give give you a card, they'll give you a phone. There are ways out. All right.
So absolutely.
Let's talk about do you have foster care there?
We do have foster care here. Yeah. It's a government program, but it's a bit of a mess because you know the lack of funding, of course, and sometimes the foster carers leave a lot to be desired as well. So the system, in my opinion, is quite broken here in Australia.
Yeah, all around the world. I mean, you know, but
all around the world,
hard for foster parents too. You're bringing in a child that has been subjected to sexual assault. They're cunning. They have to be kind of slick and sly themselves because they have to survive. You know, sometimes they got to steal food because the place they were at before didn't feed them at all.
Correct.
You know, they don't want to talk. They don't want to bathe. You have a social worker that's got a case of 50 kids that she can't see. Yeah. It's an over, you just get over exasperated. You just get exhausted.
Overwhelming. Yeah, absolutely.
So you're an advocate.
Many layers to that.
You're an advocate. What are you doing? Tell me, what are you doing to shape this a different kind of way?
So my idea, well, I've actually started. I've registered my own business called Lightest Touch. And I want to... I've actually got 20 odd years experience working in the disability field. So I've worked as a case manager. I'm a social worker. I put myself through university to be a social worker. So I graduated about 4 or 5 years ago in that scope. So I've registered my business, and my aim is to work with people who have disabilities and to advocate for them and work on a strengths-based empowerment model of allowing them a voice. And my idea is to keep my caseload low so that I can give them my full attention and, and advocate and support them to be the best they can be, you know. And so I think everyone...
Are you talking about we call them CASA, court-appointed advocates? So you would have a child or a...
Mine is not through the courts, and mine is people of free will. So just people that need navigating around the system, because I know the system very well. For me, that's about supporting them to stand on their feet and, you know, open their voice to advocate for themselves.
Let me try to figure this out. Are these people that have already transitioned in adulthood, 18 and over, or are you working to support younger children that are in the system? I'm trying to color that.
All right. Now, these are people that have come through the system and that have gone through that process, but they're out now. They're kind of my age, if you like. So my aim is to support them to deal with the past and look at where they are now.
So is that with talk therapy, through meditation, through riding on the back of one of those dragons? How are you taking people on that journey?
Just through listening, some basic counseling skills of listening to their story, honoring the journey, allowing them, giving them permission, I guess, to just be who they are and to honor that and support it as well. So Yeah, for me, people are their own experts. I'm my own expert. Everyone's an individual. Everyone has their own experience. Everyone has their own ways of dealing with stuff. And for me, that is very important, that you individualize when you work with people. You work with what is and not what you expect, you know, because everyone's on their own pathway. And so that's primarily how I see it, is to just be with them and allow them to open up to their full potential of how they see that. And I used to do that in my work as well with Aboriginal people. So back in my working days with disability in the government sector, I used to work one-on-one with an Aboriginal man, and that was my way of working with him in his trauma, was to just sit and listen to him.
So, and it's different, and it was, I'm sure, an aha moment for you, because
yes.
Not only did you deal with the trauma, but you had to deal with the color. You had to deal with
yeah.
the culture.
Yeah.
You had to deal with, you know, back and forth, the First Nations people, plus the, you know, Australian settlers. And this yes. person is trying to work through all of this, and you're trying to be transparent. So that really yeah. takes a lot. What do you yeah. do to release the anxiety? When you work with these people, you know, you get full. It's like a massage therapist, energy worker,
contract.
Yeah. What do you do to take the angst off of you and just settle back into what's your normal?
I just be me. I'm just me. I'm open and I'm truthful and I'm honest with them. And I just say, I can't fix you, but I can stand with you while you look at yourself and how you want to, you know, manage your life or your story. So that's how I manage it. I'm just me. Okay. I'm not anyone special.
You say you're just you, who you are now. Rewrite your story.
Yes.
Rewrite that story for me really quickly in the pages of your book. What would your life be like if you didn't have that? What would be your fantasy?
My fantasy, oh gosh. Well, firstly, not to experience the life I've had, for sure. It would be to be raised in a family that was loving and caring and, you know, that had no violence to it or, you know, abuse. It would be, you know, like, you know, in the movies, you know, the perfect home where there's a loving parents and
that's exactly what you said was right, in the movies.
Yeah, in the movies.
In the movies. You know,
reality for a lot of people is not that, you know.
But some people's movies are nightmares.
Yeah, correct.
You know, they're horror stories. But there's some that are great fantasies. But also, you're able to rewrite your own script. And that's what you're going to do in the pages of the book. And that's what you're going to do with other individuals, is you're going to rewrite this wrong. And bravo. Yeah. Good on you.
Yes.
Good on you.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. It's taken me a long time to get to the space I'm in now, but it's been quite a journey. I'm just going to utilize the skills I've learned over the years and just, you know, put my story, put my life into words and just present it. And, you know, whoever reads it or looks at it, I hope it gives them some inspiration, because, you know, there's always a silver lining to every cloud, if you like. Is that the word?
You know, I say, to whom much is given, much is required. So now I'm going to ask you one of those questions that they always ask you in a job interview. Where do you give yourself 5 years, 10 years? What's on your bucket list? What is there yet to accomplish that's going to make you just so happy?
Well, I would actually really love to go to Ireland.
Oh.
Yeah, I would love to go and visit Ireland. And I want to go and see the place of my ancestors. So, I want to do that. That's my bucket list.
Well, absolutely. Go there and stay about 3 weeks. I got a friend that got a castle. We're going to rent the castle and do a retreat, so we may all
get there. That would be awesome. I would just love that.
I'm in Ireland and Scotland, and she said it is business. She said it is a great place to be.
I'm fascinated with all that medieval stuff, the castles and the, you know, the beautiful
dragons.
Richness of it, and dragons, yeah.
The mold.
I love all that. I love that stuff. So, yeah, that's what I want to do.
It's amazing. Well, again, you can rewrite your own story anytime you like. All you got to do is pick up a pen and a piece of paper and design your life. You can have a life by design, because the things that hurt you the most, Denise, are really our best teachers. And, you know, only the strong survive. So pat yourself on the back for survival. Thank you. Being able to tell the story. Some people would still be in that dark space and not be able to come out.
Yes.
You know? Yep. And I know that there's going to be days that you're going to go like, wow. But then I want you to say, wow, look at where I was and look at who I am and look who I'm able to help. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you. If they want to work with you, if they want to get on the wait list for your anticipated memoir that's going to be coming out, how can they contact Denise Lucy?
Well, my name, Denise Lucy at hotmail.com. So that would be one way of contacting me. That will also be my contact for my business as well. So,
that's Denise Lucy, no dots, no dashes. .com. Is there a dot?
And my last name is spelled L-U-C-E-Y. So,
Is that is it a dot au after that or just dot com?
No, I think it's just dot com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Brands, we're going to put that on the back of the interview, okay? Because I want to get in contact with Denise. I'm so glad to have her here on The Edge. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
For doing the work that it takes to become a thriver, not only a survivor. And that's what we do on The Edge. We get down to it and we lose
our mind.
But this is where we are. This is where we want you to be. We want you to sign up. We want you to subscribe. We want you to like. We want you to share and play this over and over and over again. Because you know what? You just might learn something, Brains. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you for your time, April. It's been lovely speaking with you.
You too. Bye, Brains.
Thank you.